The Creative Business Podcast is brought to you by Noosey. Online proposals made simple for creative businesses. Visit Noosey.com to learn how your business can start winning more projects today.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Creative Business Podcast, the podcast that aims to help you build a better, more successful creative business. My name is Nathan, and I'm joined here today by Marcus Blankenship. Marcus is a leadership expert who's trying to rid the world of bad managers, so I hope you're not one of those. Marcus has been running, or ran, rather, should I say, a very successful agency for 7 years and works now exclusively with creative businesses, so we've decided that as Marcus has done some interviews with us in the past, he's done some shows with us in the past, he's going to come and join me, and he's going to be here for a good few episodes, and we're going to discuss a lot of ins and outs of running a creative business, and we're going to see where it takes us. So hello, Marcus.
Hey, Nathan. I'm super excited to be here.
Fantastic. So how are you doing anyway? Christmas is just gone. How was that for you?
Oh, such a relief now that it's over. I mean, I love it, but like, it's so much pressure we put on ourselves. We have 3 kids. They're all married. We have grandkids. So it's a big affair that takes a lot of planning.
I can imagine. It's kind of weird for me because I'm in Spain. So Christmas is done quite differently here. Like, to me, it's not the typical traditional British Christmas, which is, I imagine, to be more similar to the American Christmas. So yeah, it's quite a different kettle of fish here. So it seems very understated, should we say. So in my mind, it almost passes me by without even noticing now, which is kind of weird.
But you know, I guess, yeah, but you know, my wife even said this year, she said, you know, it came and went so fast and it was so much work and then it was over before we knew it. It was like we blinked and all that time and money and planning and food is now over and we're just sort of left with this pre-New Year feeling of, boy, what's next?
Oh, nice tie-in. Nice tie-in. Yeah. pre-new year. And funnily enough, we were just talking before we started recording about gym memberships that get sort of pushed away come January. And I haven't actually been to the gym for over a month. So yeah, maybe we should talk about the new year. Setting realistic goals for yourself and your business. How did you approach that? Let's have a look at this in a couple of stages. How did you approach that perhaps when you were an agency owner, and how might you look at it now?
I definitely have the unused gym membership. So, you know, when I was an agency owner, at first the goals were primarily about how much can we earn, more money next year? And maybe even if we don't care about profit, because when you're small, you just say, I just need more revenue and the profit will come. As we went on, we actually started to set profitability goals per project. These became something that were not just done ad hoc, but we would have sort of internal standards. You know, we want to make 50% profit because we on each project. And then the other thing we would do is we would start as time went on for the agency, we realized that we were in a really dangerous place if we didn't have a few months, 6 months, a year's worth of runway in the bank. And we hadn't been saving for that. One client called that our war chest. We didn't really understand that at the time, but he said, you know, if you don't have a war chest, you're going to get in with a client that's too big for you and you're going to have to go to battle with the lawyers and you're not going to have any money to do that. And he said, the only way you can survive in this business is if you have a war chest to both live off of when times are tight and to be able to fund your efforts to defend your company. And that was like a mind blow effort for me, you know, like, oh my gosh.
You've already said something really interesting there actually about revenue. Like, we all want to increase revenue, but you actually split it up into revenue and profitability. I know for a fact that when I was freelancing, those two were the same, one and the same. You know, for me, all I was interested in was making more money. There was no separation. You know, it didn't matter to me what my costs might be or the cost of a project or anything. To me, it was just money coming in through the front door. So I wonder how many others are in a similar situation where it's simply just making more money and then, you know, we'll see how that gets cut after.
That's right. We'll shake out the profit. It's like somebody saying, we'll sell below cost, but we'll make it up on volume. I always think that's a funny joke, but yeah, I mean, the fundamental accounting equation reminds us, you know, from like my accounting 101 class that you've got revenue minus expenses equals profit. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, your business is powered by profit. I don't care how much you care about it and love it and want to, nurture it and feel like it's such a special snowflake. If you don't have profit, you won't be in business for long.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know a lot of freelancers, a lot of consultants have that sort of 100K goal just because it's, you know, because everybody talks about it, et cetera. You know, it's a nice round figure and it's great. But you can finally get the 100K and like 85 grand of that has gone out the door in expenses and, you know, whatever, living on 15K a year is not ideal. So.
Yeah. And it sneaks up on you, doesn't it? You don't notice the 85 has walked out the door because it walks out in little tiny increments sometimes. And so it's not till your tax guy or your tax gal at the end of the year sits down and says, wow, your expenses are really high. Or if you're like me, your spouse says, hey, can we just take a Christmas bonus? And I say, bonus? There's no money in the bank. I mean, I don't know where it all went, but we're certainly not going to take a Christmas bonus. We'll be lucky to get a Christmas bird this year of any kind. So it is the kind of thing that sneaks up on you. Yeah.
So is this something, do you think, for you at least, has changed since running sort of, I say, a business in inverted commas and now being in business for yourself?
Yeah, it's definitely one of my goals. I don't think in terms of revenue as often as I think about profitability goals. And then, of course, as soon as I think about profit goals, I break that up into per month or per project. You know, like I create small goals for myself. I can't say, well, I want to make $600,000 this year and I want to keep $450,000 or something. What I need to do is say, I want to make X amount per month or I want to make X amount per week. And I realize that if I'm not making a certain, and this is one of the first things that I did that really helped me get my mind straight about money was when I had more than three people on my team, I realized my costs were really growing. And so I would set daily revenue and profitability goals because I realized if you just slip on a daily revenue goal if you slip 3 or 4 days in a row, you have to make it up that month, right? You're behind the curve. It's not okay to get to the end of the month and say, oh, crud, we're out of money. You need to know after you didn't hit your revenue goals for 2 or 3 days that something might need to, you know, you might need to take some action, or at least you need to be aware of it. So that's what I did. What did you do? I mean, you're in the same boat.
Yeah, I was pretty terrible. I still am pretty terrible on goals. But I think my biggest mistake was always overreaching. And I know some people would say, oh, well, that's what goals are for, right? And now I don't think that's what they are for. So if I explain myself a bit further, you know, I would always say, right, I'm here right now, but I want to be there by the end of next year. And wherever here is and wherever there was, there would be a world in between.
Boy.
And like you, I would never really, maybe I'd do a very brief sort of splitting up of that goal, say, and yes, they were generally always revenue goals as well. Running businesses, we tend to think about money an awful lot. Maybe we can talk about some other goals in a minute, but that is always the big one, right? So maybe I would split that up very sort of in a very loose way. Well, you know, this month I need to earn X and then I fall behind on that month. So therefore I'd need to catch up again the following month and it just makes it even harder. But yeah, I think my common failing with yearly goals was just simply overreaching. So it wasn't like, well, do you know what? This year I've made X, so next year I want to make X plus Y. Usually I'd add the whole alphabet to that. I want to make X plus A, B, C, D, E, F all the way through to Z again. And it was just, it becomes quite disheartening, I think, you know, when you get to the end of that year and you're like, you know, we haven't done it again. Yeah. You know, I haven't got there again. We haven't had that growth. We haven't had that revenue spike. We haven't had, you know, the number of signups or the number of customers or clients. And for me, that's become quite a frustrating process. And I think it's only this year, like I'm 41 now, you know, I've been working for over a decade in the creative industry. And now this is in our third year of Noosey. And it's only this year now that I've started to realize that, do you know what, actually maybe putting realistic, attainable goals in place might be more beneficial in so many ways, you know, because to be able to hit a goal, even if it is maybe a little sort of, you know, maybe if you are under aiming, shall we say, I'd rather hit that goal than, you know, fail by a mile every single time on all the rest of the goals.
I think that's great. Do you have any examples of those smaller, let's call them, they don't have to be smaller. What are the realistic goals you're kicking around for 2018?
Well, I only really sort of have one goal, one major goal for this year, and that's to, and this is a biggie actually, this is to better manage my work-life balance. I've always been I've always had a very sort of addictive personality. So whatever I've got into, I've gotten into big time, and everything else kind of suffers alongside that. So this last year and a half, for example, I got really big time into cycling, into mountain biking, a bit of everything, to be honest. And that became my main addiction, shall we say, for the last year, and everything else outside of that has and maybe suffered as to an extreme, you know, slightly extreme, but that became my main focus. And so now things have changed again. I'm actually working, because I've been working from home for years. I've started working from an office again recently. That's helped to sort of boost productivity and a feeling of commitment again to the business, to myself. But what I'm struggling with, and what I've always struggled with, is keeping a healthy balance between, okay, I love being out on my bike. I love feeling healthy. I love feeling strong. I also love having a healthy business. And I also love spending time with my family and want to spend more time with my family,
right,
without feeling guilty for any of the other two areas of my life. And that's a big one. I mean, for me, it's a huge one. Some people have got it nailed, and, you know, great for them if they just want to share with me how they did it. Fantastic. But that's mine for 2018. I think that's pretty much going to take all my energy.
You know, I agree. If there's people out there who have this nailed, like, let's give them a place to write in and tell them how it's done. Because what you said, just, and this isn't like pre-rehearsed. We didn't talk about this in advance, but that idea of the addictive personality that gets focused on something to the exclusion of almost everything else. And I realize that you're not, you know, you're not ignoring everything else in your life, but you're deprioritizing. And I do the same thing, whether mm-hmm. it's one part of my business or one hobby, or, you know, when I was actively dieting and really working on my health, that came, like, that got prioritized above everything else. So I'm really interested to hear, do you have a strategy for becoming addicted to balancing all these things? Because I feel like that's the addiction you're hoping to pick up, is the addiction of balance.
Well, I think for me, any sort of addiction, obviously, I hope if anybody just drops into the middle of this podcast, you know, rewind, so you don't get the wrong impression.
Who knows what they're going to hear?
Yeah, so don't get the wrong impression. But I think for me, any addiction comes from a feeling of success. So, like, for example, the world of cycling is been new to me only the last 3 years. And in the last year and a half, I, for some reason, I just picked it up really quickly and I did really well at it. Actually ended up helping out a local company here in Madrid who does cycling adventure tours all around Spain. So I saw that, do you know what? I'm actually not bad at this, and I could see results and I could feel good about it and I could see a progression. And that for me helped to draw me into that particular addiction, should we say. I could see progress. But of course, while I was spending time on that area of my life, feeling good about myself physically and healthy and something new and a midlife crisis, perhaps, as some might describe it, the other areas obviously were beginning to suffer. And, you know, Nusi is still a solid business, but it wasn't experiencing the growth that it could have been if I'd been as focused. So, for example, the last couple of months, Michael and I have come back in. We've got some new things going on, something that I can't actually talk about now, but hopefully in a couple of weeks, it's all going to come out and it's going to be out there and we can discuss this. But it's brought me back in and it's built the excitement again. And it's helping me to refocus on Nusi, because I'm refocusing, or rather because that energy is there again, that excitement. You know, that's, you know, as they say, the harder you work, the greater your is it the luck surface area, whatever that phrase is. It just seems to be the
luck surface area.
Yeah, just the harder you work, basically, the luckier you get. And that, I mean, I already see it reflected now in things that we're doing with Nusi, and everything seems to be positive and great. And so for me, I think what creates addiction is that feeling of success in something. So what I need to be able to do, I think, to self-analyze myself in front of everyone, is somehow create a winning situation in each one of these areas. So that would be my business, my family, and then I kind of put the cycling as a third area because those are three important areas for me. So somehow I need to be able to do that. I don't know exactly how that's going to work yet, but it needs to be, I need to create a win-win-win in all three of those areas for me to be able to hopefully advance on that.
I remember when my kids were little one time, they asked me, you know, when your kids get to a certain age, they ask you about all kinds of silly things. And what my son, he said, Dad, why do people do drugs? You know, in America, we have a big lots of anti-drug advertisements and, you know, drugs are bad. And of course they are, especially there's so many terrible destructive drugs. And he said, oh, you know, that my teacher says they're terrible. Why would anyone do drugs? I said, well, son, because they feel good. And he just looked at me. He was like, what? And I said, well, people do things that feel good. Doesn't mean it's good for them. It doesn't make them make good decisions, right? It's a problem that it feels so good, and it feels so good they don't want to do anything else, so they ignore everything else in their life and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But like I remember thinking that may have been the first time I realized something similar to what you said, right? It's we become addicted to good feelings. Mm-hmm. So when my kids were teenagers, like I was kind of an absentee dad going to work because frankly, I could be very successful at work, whether it was my corporate job or my own business. I could be respected. I could work hard and see results. It was like instant feedback. People thought I was a great guy. And at home with three teenagers, if you're the dad, sometimes you feel like the big idiot. You don't feel very successful. So it's easy to, it's easy to run away and get addicted to that thing that where you feel like, well, at least here I'm really good at this and people really appreciate me. And, that was something that was really hard for me and really hard for my family until I sort of figured out what was happening. And you're right. You might have to figure out how to get feedback on, are you good at balancing? Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's somebody in your life you can ask or sort of get feedback from them because it's really hard to see from the outside if you're balancing three things well, right?
Yeah, totally.
It's hard. It's just hard to see ourselves because at any given time, we easily feel like we're giving something too much or too little. So maybe it's asking your business partner, maybe it's asking your spouse and just kind of committing on a regular basis to a checkup to get outside information about this balance you want to achieve, because you may not be able to feel when it may not be like a feeling in the same rush as you completed a race or you hit a revenue goal, right? Mm-hmm. It might be a much nuanced way to sort of determine success. And you might need somebody else to help you identify if you're there.
Sure. And I think you're probably right as well, because when you're in the midst of that, that feeling of success or that feeling of, you know, all that addiction, should we say, you really have no clue. You just feel good because you feel good for whatever that reason is at the time. So it's hard to look outside and see, well, I feel good because I don't know, Nushi is growing, or I feel good because I did a really long ride today, or I feel great because I had a great weekend with the family or whatever. So it can be hard to, I think, put that into the larger picture.
Yeah. And, you know, if people have financial goals, I am just going to encourage you to engage with a financial professional, talk about those goals, revenue goals, savings goals, make sure your taxes are paid. If you haven't started saving for your retirement and that you're in a place of, you know, here in the U.S., that's a really important issue if you're self-employed because the government gives you basically no money after you retire. Unless you've given them money for a long time first. And so if you're self-employed and you haven't been doing that, like I think having somebody like your accountant who you meet with, maybe you just make a goal to meet with your accountant regularly and look at the numbers of your business really honestly, like run those financial reports, commit to learning what they mean, commit to sitting down with a financial professional and saying, I don't even know what kind of goals I should have, but I feel like it's time for me to have realistic you know, financial goals for my business, maybe for myself, and then sit down with your financial planner, your bookkeeper, your CPA, whatever, and make those goals together, and then ask them to help keep you on track and to do that on a monthly basis. And by the way, yes, that will cost you money, right? Because those people aren't cheap. But I at least I found that to be a worthwhile expense.
Yeah, I know a lot of people, and I've had this discussion quite a lot over the last couple of years. I know a lot of people are scared to spend money on their business, but I'm a big believer in that, you know, as the old age old saying goes, you know, you have to spend money to make money. I really do believe that. And I think you have to actually try it before you can, you know, see whether it's worth it for you, because, you know, a lot of us tend to sit down and say, oh, well, I'll do my own taxes, or I'll do my own website, or I'll code, or, you know, whatever. And it's usually always not a great job.
Not a great decision.
Yeah.
Right.
Apart from the fact that it takes
the cobbler's children have no shoes or something like that, right?
Yeah. It's always best to get the best person possible for the job to help you see those things definitely. So, I mean, outside of the financial thing, I think we've given that as a, you know, almost a given for our businesses. We want to see that grow. Have you got anything for 2018? Any sort of personal?
I do. And it's something I'm in, boy. And I just really took a step this week. I paid somebody a lot of money to be a mentor and a coach of mine. I call it a mentor in an area of figuring out how to create a steady stream of the right kind of clients in 2018. And I just mailed the check off yesterday. And I'll be honest, it's more money than I've spent on my business in probably 10 years at once.
Wow.
And it was painful. Like I delayed. I remember sitting there in front of the post office yesterday and I'm like, okay, you haven't sent the check. You could still back out. And it was like, come on, Marcus, if you talk about this, you always complain, you know, you're grousing to your wife, right? My wife is like, she said just what you did, Nathan. She's like, look, you got to spend money to make money. Why are you trying to be the expert on so many things? She says, you're the leadership and management expert. You can't be the marketing expert, the expert on everything in the universe. You're always telling other people to get help, Marcus. Why won't you do it? Ugh. Yeah, I hate to hear that. But so yeah, I'm really hoping to kind of really focus my work on and find the people that it really makes a tremendous impact in their world for, versus people who, yeah, that's great, Marcus, but, you know, it doesn't really change their world all that much.
So if you're going to someone who's an expert in that field, I mean, what is it you're looking for there? Like is it just help like with marketing, or is it help with accountability, or is it something completely different that you can't do for yourself?
It's a good question, because I really want to be able to say I could pick up a book and do this for myself.
Sure.
But the reality is I own a whole bunch of books. It's like that gym membership. These books have gone red. Whenever I sit down to read them, my mind gets wrapped up in circles, because I can't call the author, Alan Weiss or whoever, and say, what did you mean by this? So I chose somebody
Alan Weiss who won't get back to had you. A program.
not unless I write him a big check, right?
Yeah. You need to be writing another big check for that response, yeah.
Exactly. So it was partially to have a do it with me approach, not a feeling of I'm doing it all by myself. It was partially accountability. It was partially somebody to I guess help me, who has been down that road and who's helped a lot of other people. Because the first thing I've been challenged to do is really pick a market position. And as you know, that's very hard when you're in our business, any creative business, and all you really want to do is serve people. It's very easy to think, well, I can serve anybody who wants to hire me, but that is just death for your marketing and position.
Man, I think that's the toughest call. I really, really think that of every aspect of running a creative business, I think that's the toughest call to make. And I think, I don't know, 90% of us never make that decision. We just stay as marketing for X, designer for X, Y, and Z, you know, instead of saying, you know, I'm here to help you improve your business and you are this.
Exactly. And this was the year I really committed that I realized I'd been doing that with my leadership work, with my with my coaching and mentoring and other services, it was like, oh, whoever stumbled upon me and thought I was a nice guy and I could somehow earn their trust, they might pay me some money. But half those people wanted something I didn't really provide. The other half weren't really committed because they didn't understand the value. And it's just led me to this place of if I want to actually be self-employed and work from the desert of Oregon in the United States for the next 20 years until I retire, I got to figure this out, because it's not like I can just walk into any business in our town. Our town is, you know, 20,000 people, and none of them hire leadership experts. So yeah, this is just something I'm committed to figuring out. And thank you for acknowledging it's hard, because it was actually kind of hard to admit I hadn't done it yet, to be honest.
No, but I think it is. It really, for me, it's always been the place that I fell with any business that I've run, whether that was freelancing or product. And I think it's the one you see in most everyone else as well. And everyone knows they need to do it. And everyone tells their fellow, you know, creative workers that they need to do it. You need to do this. You need to pick a niche, or, you know, however you want to put it, you know, everyone knows they need to do it, but, you know, no one, very few people seem to do it, or seem to do it in a way that's compelling enough or as focused enough as it needs to be to actually attract that person. Because at the end of the day, we're all petrified of, you know, never getting another client again, you know. Oh, well, if I focus on this,
right,
on this person, then I'm never going to get another client, because then I'm excluding this guy or this girl or this company or this business. And I think it's terrifying. Well, I think we should probably talk about this in depth at some point. I think about, to me, I think it's terrifying.
And you're right. Okay. I'm just going to use this kind of crass analogy. I think niching and positioning is a little bit like, okay, it's a little bit like teenage sex. Everybody talks about it when you're a teenager, but nobody's doing it, right? And it's just like,
well, somehow
that everybody's, well, but and maybe now more than they used to. But when I was in high school, at least it seemed like, and I'm 47, it was this thing where there was this perception that, oh, everybody wanted to talk about this. But I think when the statistics came out, a very small part of the population was actually like engaging in this behavior.
Yep.
And you're right. It's so much easier, I found, to niche someone else, right?
Like, niche down. Yeah.
Yeah, Nathan, let me just tell you, you should just focus on Nusi, on design firms, over 50 million people who have dedicated, you know, if you just do that, you're going to be great. And you're thinking, you're a crazy person, right? There's no way you're going to take that advice. And it's probably terrible advice anyway. It is the thing that in some ways, I attribute not positioning ourselves to the failure of my agency, because each one of the three partners in their own minds had picked a position we wanted to hold in the market. I wanted to be a serious software engineering company writing custom apps. My partner wanted to be a digital marketing company focused on startups and early stage startups and doing a lot of branding. And the app was like, oh, we could sell that secondary, but we should just talk about how we're all about getting market traction. And frankly, the third partner didn't care. He's like, I just want to code. You guys just figure this out. But without a common direction, the meetings we would have about what client should we pursue, or our marketing efforts, or our website redesign, the 17th website redesign for ourselves, or whatever.
That's so much fun, though.
yeah, I think you got the info. Right. Yeah, they're not fun, and they never were productive. And at the end of the day, to be honest, the three partners kind of looked at each other and went, I don't think we want to be in this relationship anymore. We're also frustrated with each other, and we've really tried, but it wasn't until hindsight and a lot of soul searching afterwards that I realized it was our inability to get everyone on the same page at the partnership level that caused a lot of problems. And certainly marketing was just one place where those problems shone through.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we're definitely going to need to talk about at least a couple of these topics again separately. I think one about,
this is going to be my weekly therapy session.
Is it even possible? You know, well, of course it's possible, but the whole niching down instead of telling others to do it. And I think as well, I want to hear, and I'm sure other people want to hear as well, about why did that agency end up closing its doors? But we can talk about that again another day, especially an agency that on the outside was successful in every way. And when I say every way, we took in dollars, symbols. That's what people see from the outside, right? They see success as
sure.
big clients.
I mean, most marriages look pretty good from the outside too, until the day people say we're done and everybody goes, oh, I had no idea there were problems. Yeah. We don't usually go around sharing our problems while we're in the middle of it. But I'm happy to talk about that. And then we can talk about some of your failures too. How's that?
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. No problem. No problem there. I got plenty of those. All right. Fantastic. Well, as I think this is probably the first episode that we've done together where you're going to sort of officially be my co-host on the show, let's tell people where they can go and find out more about you and your business and what you've got going on. Where's the best place to track you down?
The best place is my website, marcusblankenship.com, or you can drop me an email at Marcus, M-A-R-C-U-S, marcus@marcusblankenship.com. That's the place right now where I sort of hang out my shingle, and we're doing a lot of exciting stuff in 2018, but we're trying to set realistic goals and happy to report back on those realistic goals in a future episode. How about you, Nathan? Where can people find you?
Well, to be honest, I'm no longer my own entity. So I, like Nathan Powell on Twitter, I mean, I'm still there. I never tweet anymore. Basically, you can find me through Nusi. So everything is done there at nusi.com. That's NUSII.com. And the best place is just to find me on nusi.com or through the blog there. We've got lots of great content and articles going on, even a couple of interviews in the past with yourself. On the best ways to improve.
And in case people are just joining us, tell me real quick in a nutshell, what's Nusi? Because we might have some new listeners.
Sure. So Nusi is in its purest sense is online proposal software, but it's something that we built from scratch and if you've listened to past episodes, if you're new, this is a podcast sort of orientated towards freelance consultants, small agencies and studios. And this is essentially what I've been for the last 10 years prior to Nusi. And I was sick of spending days in design, in my case, creating proposals, trying to get them out the door in time for customers. So I thought, well, let's see if there are other people out there as well who are sick of it as I am. And so we started building Nusi, and essentially we are doing our very best to keep the process as simple as possible. I mean, sure, there are other solutions out there, plenty of great solutions out there who will do their best to give you a full experience, a full solution when it comes to proposals, but we're doing our best to keep it as simple and as quick as possible because I hate writing proposals. So I just want to get in. I want to get the job done, and I want to get out again and get on with what I'm doing.
That's right. Get on the bike. Go
exactly.
back with the family.
Exactly.
Get back to making money, because writing proposals doesn't make you money, does it?
Writing proposals will make you money, but it sucks. So we've tried to make it really as quick and as painless as possible. So, yeah, so go and check it out. It's specifically for us, for our audience, for our kind of people. Fantastic. Well, we're going to be back again the same time next week with another episode. And we hope you can join us again. Have a great weekend, Marcus.
Absolutely. Hey, Happy New Year.
And to you, mate. Have a great one.
Take care. Bye-bye.